This year, experience the NHL playoffs your way. Want to watch a single? Do or die Game 7, a full week of heavy-hitting back-and-forth series. Then check out Sling's 1, 3, and 7-day passes. Watch the Chase for the Cup on ESPN and TNT, starting as low as $4.99. No long-term contracts or overpaying. Just live hockey at home or when you want it. Sling lets you do that. Visit sling.com to learn more.
And now it's time for the Sports Kings from Queens.
Welcome to the Sports Kings from Queens, where all the sports talk is royal, real, and straight from the boroughs. Today's Monday, December 29th. This is episode 211, last show of the year, by the way, guys. I'm Gino, joined by my co-hosts, Kevin and Darren. Please catch us wherever you get your podcast. Like, subscribe, follow us on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram. Give us a look, join our pages, leave us some comments. We're making bowl picks. Get your bowl picks out there. We like having everybody give us their bowl picks. Tonight, NFL Week 17 in the books, only one more to go. College football playoffs getting ready to start up again after a two-week absence. We're going to get it going locally with some NFL football. We'll start with the Jets. Lost to the Pats, 42-10. Drake May threw career-high 5 touchdowns. Patriots dismantled this Jets team, unfortunately. They officially clinched the AFC East. Kev?
Yeah, and to me, the best news was with the game going on was Morgan Moses hit 90% of the snaps this year, which raised some incentive clause in his contract, which all of a sudden gives the Jets a fifth-round compensation pick instead of a seventh-round compensation pick. That was the best news to come out of that game. You know, basically, we know the offenses are struggling with Brady Cook, undrafted free agent, and quarterback. But you look at the defense also. You know, right now they've got – by yesterday, McDonald and Barron, the fifth-round pick last year, are both on the IL. They're on the defensive line. In the secondary, Thomas, Adams, Cisco, Brownlee, Oliver are all on the IL. You throw in the loss of Sauce and Quinnen, and all of a sudden, they've got 6 undrafted free agents playing on defense also. You're not going to win. The talent's not there. You wish they would have seen a little bit better effort. Can't wait for next week and for season to be done. That's it. Darren?
Just end the season's been our mantra for how many years, Kev? Outside of a couple years in the Parcells era and a couple years on the Rex. And Herm had a couple years too. I can't even say that. Yep. But just end the season was the Jet acronym for how long. And we're there now. I mean, I was telling you guys before the broadcast, I actually turned the game off and went to red zone because I'm in the Super Bowl of the fantasy championship, which was far more important to me than watching this team embarrass itself yet again. And you wish you could see a little bit more effort. That's the one thing that stares you in the face is that the defense cannot stop anybody. And
so there
are two defensive tackles that are okay. They got Jermaine Johnson, who's still coming back from that injury and has not been the same player. I don't know if he ever will be. Hopefully he will be. Sherwood seems to play really hard. Quincy made a statement, though, that kind of freaked me out a little bit. He was like, well, you know, if we get the right defensive coordinator, you know, I'll play hard wherever it may be. But I mean, he didn't act like he cared if he was here. You know what I mean, Kev?
Goodbye. Goodbye,
yeah,
Quincy.
Hey, listen, we don't need 2 undersized linebackers anymore. I think Quincy's a playmaker. But if you don't want to be here, don't be.
Yep. I mean,
and I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was going to say, do you disagree with the lack of talent in defense right now?
They have none.
They have none. No talent. I mean, I can't put it all on Glenn. I mean, there's some that you wish it was some better effort to show that Glenn is rallying the team or motivating the team. But when they don't have that much talent on the defense, I don't know how much effort really matters at that point.
I mean, the thing is, they're never in position. We've gone, what, how many weeks now without the interception? That's exciting.
All season.
I mean, listen, the fact is that even if they get one next week, they're still setting the record for fewest in the season. It's just a bad defensive football team right now with – out a lot of direction. You can't even judge the interim defensive coordinator right now because there's nothing to judge him off. Wilkes had the team somewhat at full boat and did crap with it. So I was happy about the Wilkes move, but yeah, this team's embarrassing itself. G?
I know you guys want your coach back. I'm not saying he shouldn't come back, but this is a bad look the last couple of weeks. It's just bad look. I hear you, Kev, with all the talent. I get it. I mean, they're completely depleted on defense. You got a ton of offense. I get it. But this is just a bad look for a first-year head coach coming down the stretch of a team that's had a bad year, a lot of injuries. But this is just a bad look because if you're not paying attention, and some of these people aren't, your first thing is he's got to go because the team looks like it's giving you absolutely nothing. I mean, after the first half, this game was done. There was no need to watch the first quarter half at that point. The first quarter was done. But once you got to halftime, Kev, if you were in the stadium, there was no need to stay. It was done. The game was done. It was over. So.
But even what pisses me off is that they're down 28-3, and the Patriots were handing the ball off. They were going to run out the clock to halftime. And the Jets were calling timeouts, and the Patriots said, "You're going to call timeouts? All right, we're going to put the guys out there." And they get called for a taunting penalty down 25? What the hell is that crap?
Yeah, Vrabel did not call the dogs off, let me tell you.
AFC's rivalry. He hates the Jets. He always has.
But once the Jets started calling timeouts there, that's when he said, "All right, F you guys too." He was calling them off at 28-3 before the half.
The interesting thing is that this team is a lot better than I thought they were going to be. Patriots, obviously, Geno picked them to make the playoffs. I did not.
No.
But the one thing I'll say is they have exactly 2 wins against teams above 500. So we're going to find out how good they are in the playoffs.
It's a good point. And Darren, I said this week one after I made the originally – picked the Dolphins for the last wild card and changed it. And that's the exact point, Darren, which is I looked at the schedules a little more closely and I'm like, there's no way the Pats aren't winning 10. There's no way because the schedule was so bad.
They've played the weakest schedule in the NFL.
Yeah.
And that's okay. They do what they're supposed to do. Them.
I mean, I'm not trying to take away from the Patriots.
They
on the schedule.
I agree.
I still hate them, but you know what?
Oh, yeah.
They're good. They're really good. May looks really good. Scott Hansen, I think, is a family member or just has a crush on Drake May. You can't watch the freaking red zone without this guy gushing. Before the game starts, he's gushing. You're like, God damn it, Scott Hansen. A lot of us hate the Patriots for a lot of years. It's like gushing over – it's like when Collinsworth does a Chief game. Everybody goes nuts because he gushes over Mahomes. He even made fun of himself last night, which I thought was funny, by the way. I probably would have made a big deal about Mahomes. It was like some sort of stupid reference, but it's so obvious, but it's like, it's funny as hell. Listen, the loser of, and we'll get into it in a minute, the loser of the Harbaugh Tomlin coaching matchup this week, if one of those guys get fired, yes, I would forego Glenn for one of those two.
Yes.
Outside of that, I'd like to keep Aaron Glenn and see if we can get some sort of continuity with all of the picks. Please don't trade up. Just, we have so many holes. That one hole at quarterback with everything else being weak isn't going to help you. I know that if it's the right quarterback, I guess you have to. But the Jets have been so bad, Kev, at picking the right quarterback that it makes me nervous.
Yeah. So now we're going to get into it. Geno, Giants, Raiders.
Yep.
Get into that for a second.
Giants beat the Raiders 34-10. They snapped a 9-game losing streak with a good performance against the Raiders, but the Raiders were horrible. They didn't play some of their guys, and Max Crosby's not playing. Geno Smith is horrible this year. You know, Brock Bowers isn't playing. I mean, the list goes on and on. Darts
was 200
yards, and, you know, that's it. That's all I got.
So with that game, the Raiders, the only team with 2 wins now, they're not winning next week.
Against the Chiefs' third-string quarterback, you never know, but they shouldn't.
They're tanking. They're so tanked. So
I agree.
So assuming the Raiders get the number one, you know they're not trading out. They're drafting Mendoza anyway.
Mm-hmm.
There is an outside chance to just get the 2.
Yep.
And if Dante Moore comes out, you draft him. If they're stuck at 3, you don't trade up for Dante Moore. You don't trade up for Ty Simpson. You don't do anything stupid. You know, if Darren, I think you and I both in agreement. We're not big on Simpson at all.
I think he's athletic and accurate. I don't know if he is going to process quick enough.
Yep. Moore, we think, is a little bit better bet than Simpson.
I think so right now.
But we don't know if they're coming out.
Here's the beauty of it, Kev. If I get the three and somebody offers me something for the three and I can trade back, I trade back for more picks. That's how bad my team is. I have so many holes that I would go back from three to six, 3 to 7 and try to grab Caleb Downs, and I'd run to the podium. Run to have my safety. That would be something. I know it's a joke to say the safety is something that I'm looking forward to, but I need a linebacker that makes a difference. I need a pass rusher that makes a difference. I need a defensive back that makes a difference. I need something like that up the middle. Offensive line, I think I'm okay. I need another receiver, but I think Mitchell, if he's this number two guy, could be passable maybe. Running back's a star. Either you sign him long-term or you give him the tag and you trade him at the draft for a second or third rounder. That's really where you are right now with this team.
Yep. How many number ones do you have this year?
Two, their own and the Colts, which with them not being the playoffs.
Top 18 now. Top 18.
18 at the worst. Yep. All of a sudden, that trade that they were getting the 28th pick or whatever it was supposed to be, now they're no worse than 18th.
I know. Wow. It's great.
Thank you.
It's a great trade.
And the Cowboys keep losing too, pal. And the Cowboys' second round pick becomes a top half of the draft pick too. So now suddenly it looks a little bit better. And there's so many freaking holes.
You can't just trade everything. You can't turn it all in for a questionable quarterback this year.
Do you agree though that between either round one or round two, you have to draft a quarterback?
No.
If one falls to you that you like, yes. But you don't trade up and reach for one.
Because here's the thing, right?
Go ahead.
Suddenly, a free agent like Willis in Green Bay is going to get a contract from somebody.
Yep.
He's a free agent. How do you know? They have the third most cap space of any team in the league. They're going to cut Fields. You know that. You'll never see him in the
U.S. Oh, no. I'm not disagreeing with that. To me, you're gonna have to draft somebody. He may not be your quarterback, but you're gonna have to draft a quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, listen, you could sit there and take Altmyer in the third or fourth round and say, "Hey, listen, I want to project and see what this kid does."
Well, you got Altmyer, Nussmeier.
Yeah, Nussmeier from LSU, same boat. You know what I mean? There's a couple of guys in there. If Simpson happens to fall, I love it. But I don't love it in the first round. So if 18, they haven't projected as number 10 and he falls to 18, I'm all in. They're doing the scouting, not me.
I didn't say to trade up. All I said was between the first or second round, you're going to have to come away with one of these, with a quarterback. One of these young kids.
There's one that you like there.
And I don't care if he is your starter in 28, but for 26, somebody has to be here. You have to get somebody in here to play.
I'm still mad that they kept Cook and got rid of Adrian Martinez because I would have liked to watch him during this stretch. I know, but I watched enough of him in college and enough of him in preseasons the last couple of years. Where I knew he was a guy that I would be willing to watch. I know what you're saying, Gino. I know he's a seventh round pick, but so is Brock Purdy.
Next week, I'd rather see Hendon Hooker out there than Brady.
Absolutely.
Cook.
Absolutely. Let's see what he's got because
we remember him.
He's not competitive with Cook right now.
How electric was he in Tennessee before the injury?
He was great. He really was. He was a fun guy. He scrambles. He played in Detroit, so he knows how to throw the ball up in the air a lot. It's kind of something that's fun. The one thing is, though, I mean, because you wanted to bring it up, was the Giants, is they have their quarterback, right? So now the Giants have to fill in. They have to get guys that have a little bit of hunger and a little bit of excitement to them. You know they have their number one receiver in Neighbors. You know that they have a primary running back at maybe two with Scadaboo and Tracy, where you could live off of that. Their offensive line has gotten better, but Thomas is always hurt, so you need somebody else. And the defensive line was supposed to be great, finally showed up a little bit yesterday, but hasn't all season. But the secondary is horrible. So the Giants are another team that, not just because of the Jets, but for anybody, they probably need to trade back because they need to add more talent on the defensive side that Geno's been saying pretty much all season long.
Yep.
And me and you were kind of bought into the big names up front.
We did,
We did. I bought into the big names up front. And I feel like an idiot for it, but that's kind of really where it is. But the Giants put it together a little bit yesterday. Wandale Robinson was open all day. You know, dark. I know it's the Raiders. I get it.
It's the Raiders. They're horrible.
I agree.
And I agree with Kev. I they're tanking for sure. I mean, you know.
Well, listen, they want Fernando Mendoza.
They're tanking.
Yep.
You have a quarterback that's 6'5 and has all the physical attributes, can run a little bit, and doesn't turn the ball over much. There's a lot to like about it.
All right.
Yep. That's kind of where we sit.
All right. Before we get into the playoff scenarios, Christmas games were horrible. NFL thought they had set this up pretty well. They thought the matchups would be Dak Prescott, Jaden Daniels, followed by Jared Goff and J.J. McCarthy, followed by Bo Nix and Pat Mahomes. And instead, they got Dak Prescott and Josh Johnson and Jared Goff and Max Brosmer and Bo Nix and Chris Oladokun.
And all three of the underdogs covered. The bookies cleaned up this week because all three of the dogs covered. And the games, listen, I was waiting for Detroit to make a run in that game, and they couldn't. They were not prepared for Minnesota's defense. And when Flores has a lead on you, man, does he put pressure on you left, right, east, west, north, south. Harrison Smith, it looked like they turned the clock back about 6 years. He was all over the field. He looked great. Washington battled, G.
I know.
They battled, and you know, everything was – I mean, Josh Johnson's 106 years old. They battled like crazy to sit there and play with them. Minnesota with Max Brosmer, who probably would have maybe three more completions than I would have had in the game. But Max Brosmer, you know, they won easy. They won by 13. That was the biggest blowout of the day. And then at night, Oladokun, you know, listen, they didn't ask him to do much, and he didn't do much. The last drive, they kind of kept in. They relied on the defense, who played pretty well. And it makes – listen, Denver's the biggest enigma, and we'll get more into the playoffs when it happens – because you don't know what Bo Nix you're getting any single week. Sometimes he looks fantastic, and sometimes he looks like he plays down the competition, and he did last week, and that was pretty obvious in my opinion.
Well, we're going to start with them right now. So at the moment, we'll go through AFC.
And one last thing, and of course the NFL still dominated the ratings over the NBA, where Richard Jefferson and Kendrick Perkins cried that they shouldn't even try to be on doing football on Christmas because it's the NBA's day. There is no NBA day because your league is crap. And it's a bunch of three-pointers, and that's all you got. And I like the Knicks, but it's still crap.
You know, when Christmas is Thursday or over the weekend, you want to put the NFL line, fine. Last year they put the NFL games on Wednesday and Christmas.
That was horrible.
That's all. Wednesday, there's no place on NFL on the Wednesday.
No, next year's Friday, and they're going to do it again. Friday.
Yep. And next year is going to get worse because you'll have a Thursday night game. You'll have Friday football. You'll have Saturday football. You have Sunday football. You have Monday football. It'll be just absolute chaos. It'll be six straight days of NFL.
NBA had every matchup they could have wanted with every star they could have had, and still nobody cares because regular season NBA, it's like the NBA Cup. Yeah. Nobody cares. Anyway, I'm sorry, G.
That's all right. All right, so Denver right now is the one seed. The two seed is the Patriots at 13-3. So Denver holds a tiebreaker. Both teams fighting for the one seed. Denver wins. They're the one. They lose. The Pats win. They're the one. That takes care of the
first. If they both lose and Jacksonville wins, they're the one.
Right. That's where I was going to go next. Jacksonville
I jumped the gun. My bad.
Right. Jacksonville right now is the three seed, but exactly what you said, Darren. They beat the Colts 23-17. We go to the four seed, which is Pittsburgh right now. Pittsburgh is 9-7. Pittsburgh lost to the Cleveland Browns 13-6.
Come on.
The loss prevented them from clinching the AFC North. Sets up a winner-take-all season finale against Baltimore. Darren?
The loss of DK Metcalf is killing this team. They were going to Valdez-Scantling like he was a number one. He's a number four on most teams. This guy is not good. And they were trying to go one-on-one with Denzel Ward at the end down the stretch of the game. Well, all I'm saying to myself is find Freiermuth. Just go to Freiermuth. Just keep going to him. I don't care how many guys they have surrounding him. Keep going to the tight end. Throw it to Jaylen Warren out of the backfield. Throw it to Gainwell out of the backfield. They're trying to force feed a guy that doesn't catch the ball. I didn't understand the game plan. And it really, it seemed like a lot of the Pittsburgh Steelers fan, you know, blogs and, you know, those little groups that were getting together saying they were more worried about stopping Garrett from getting the sack than winning the game. And you know what? They didn't. They held him without the sack. So maybe they were. I guess they know that Rodgers can't move and he'll probably fumble if he gets hit. But I thought that the game plan on offense was awful by the Steelers. And the Browns defense is good.
Yeah, I think Rodgers was, what, one or two steps back and throw.
Yeah, he just didn't want to get hit.
Absolutely no time at all that he took.
So Pittsburgh right now is the four. Outside looking in is the Ravens. They beat Green Bay 41-24 on Saturday night. Derrick Henry had four touchdowns, 216 rushing yards.
Gee, where was that last week?
Yeah, I know. Trust me.
Gino was in semifinal matchups last week, had him in four leagues, and he couldn't get anything out of the guy. They benched him for 12 minutes.
So the scenario is the Steelers win or tie, they win the division, and they're in. If the Ravens win, then they win, and they're in. So that's it for the four seed.
And that's a Sunday night game next week. They put that is four.
That is the Sunday night game.
I mean, it's just Field in Pittsburgh. It's a great matchup.
Yeah. Yeah. Five seed right now is the Texans. They beat the Chargers 2016 on Saturday. Six seed is the Chargers. They're 11-5. They lost to the Texans. And then the seventh seed right now is the Bills at 11-5. And the Bills,
They lost to the Eagles.
Oh, that's right. They lost to the Eagles.
That was an interesting game, guys. I mean,
13-12.
Buffalo looked dead for most of that game. And then with the last 5 minutes, they get the quarterback sneak. Philly did nothing in the second half offensively. It was funny because Philly started crying about a quarterback sneak at one point. You like laugh to yourself. You're like, really? You got to be kidding me. And then they get back down there. They miss the extra point. So it's a 7-point game. I like that McDermott goes for two. I think it's a good move. I was okay with it. I was good. They had the momentum, so I would have went for one. But I was okay with him going for two. I understand what he's trying to do.
Yeah, and I mean, especially at home,
he just missed them.
Especially at home, I would have gone for one. But like you said, Darren, he was wide open.
He had secure right over, but then he missed them. And you don't expect Josh to miss that pass. But both teams showed warts a little bit yesterday. But it was also raining. There was a lot going on in that game. Weather was brutal. Philly escapes.
Raining in 40 as a fan, would you rather be sitting in that or at least be 10 degrees colder, at least snowing?
Oh, absolutely. Never rain.
You'll get nearly sweat.
Never rain like that.
That was just rain, right? Oh.
They were sliding all over the place.
Yeah.
All right, we go to NFC. So the one seed right now is the Seahawks at 13-3. I'm going to skip around. The five seed right now is the San Francisco 49ers at 12-4. Seahawks beat Carolina 27-10. San Francisco, they beat the Bears 42-38.
Oh, what a fun game.
That's a fun game, right?
Oh. That was a blast. Brock Purdy
and Caleb Williams combined for 11 touchdowns.
They mentioned it last night during the game. First time in NFL history, tied at 7, 14, 21, 28, and 35.
It was crazy.
I mean, it was just dip and tuck, going back and forth. I mean, it's just a great, fun game to watch.
The one thing you see, though, is that the 49ers can't protect against the pass. Rivers kind of ate them up the week before. Caleb had – they end up with a defensive stop at the end to save the game, even though DJ Moore, who was on my team, was wide open, and they decided not to throw it to him because Caleb decided to throw him one ball all game. But you see that, and you saw the warts of neither team getting a pass rush, which makes me concerned about watching them in the playoffs. Because if you go up against good teams that can generate a pass rush without having to blitz, it's going to be a little bit different for Purdy and for Caleb, in my opinion. But we'll see.
Okay, so that sets up showdown Saturday night, Seattle at San Francisco. Winner will claim the NFC West title and the number one seed.
Yep.
So that takes care of the one and the five. The two seed right now is the Bears. They lost to San Francisco. We just mentioned it. They're at 11-5. The three seed right now is the Eagles. Excuse me. They beat
The Bills.
So they're the 3 seed right now. So Bears and the Eagles, they both both clinched their division, but jockeying back and forth for the seeds for 2 or 3. We'll see what happens next week. Sorry about that. Eagles are home for Washington, and the Bears are home for Detroit. So we'll see between those two.
Well, the Bears have the tiebreaker. So the Bears get the tiebreaker. They beat the Eagles a couple weeks back on Black Friday.
Okay, we're going to come back to the 4 seed in 2 seconds. So the 6 seed right now is the Rams. They're at 11-4. They're playing right now. They're actually right now losing to Atlanta.
21-3.
And the 7 seed is the Green Bay Packers. They're locked into the 7 seed, so they can't move. They're at 9-6-1 going into next week. And we'll go back to the 4 seed. So the 4 seed is the Carolina Panthers at the moment at 8-8. And outside looking in is the Tampa Bay Buccaneers at 7-9. So here's the scenario. A win for Tampa Bay will likely secure them the division, but we'll come back to the maybe.
If
Carolina wins, they're in.
Yep.
If Tampa Bay wins, they can win the division unless the Falcons win this week and next week. Then that would cause a tiebreaker scenario that Carolina would wind up getting in over Tampa Bay.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize that.
So if Atlanta beats New Orleans next week, if they hold on here and beat New Orleans next week, that's what we're looking at.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, Atlanta can't get in, but they can they have a role here.
Yeah, they can basically knock the Bucs out. So Tampa Bay is home for Carolina Saturday. That's the first game Saturday.
What do you think of the Saturday doubleheader, guys? Just curious before we get into it.
I love it.
I'm good with it.
How bad can it be, right? There's no college anymore. It seems like a great idea to put all 3 games on their own little timeline that are really important.
The most important games. Yeah. Yep.
And then, so putting that into perspective, so they're going to play Saturday, and if Tampa Bay wins, if Atlanta finishes winning this game, next week they will host New Orleans at 1 o'clock on Sunday, so that could become an important game.
Wow.
And Tampa Bay may have one Saturday and still not know if they're actually getting in until the end of that Atlanta game. So could get real interesting.
And the Saints are playing very good football right
now.
They
are.
Just saying. Kellen Moore's got something going on down there with that team. They're playing inspired football right now.
Tyler Shuck, man, he outdueled Cam Ward this week. Saints
won. Tyler Shuck has got the job next year. They're not drafting the quarterback.
Yep.
Absolutely. Okay, so those are the playoff scenarios. We went through a couple of the big matchups. Any other matchups you want to bring up? Darren, Kevin?
Listen, I mean, I think we covered them all. The Broncos need to beat the Chargers. I know the Chargers aren't playing Herbert, but you know what? The Chargers on the road are a much better team, and Denver has a tendency to play up and down the competition. So I find that game interesting. I think Buffalo most likely leapfrogs the Chargers because Buffalo probably beats the Jets. Chargers probably lose to Denver, and all of a sudden now the 7 seed would become the Chargers, where they would play at New England. The 6 seed would be right now the way it looks. 6 seed would be Buffalo heading to Jacksonville, and I don't know if there's a better offense in the league besides San Francisco's right now than Jacksonville.
Oh, they're firing all cylinders down there.
If Buffalo wins, Chargers get the loss, and the Texans lose, the Bills would actually wind up being the 5 seed, Darren.
If the Texans do lose, absolutely, they can get the 5.
They can,
and that's what they want. And then they go to Pittsburgh or Baltimore. But they have not done great against Baltimore. They just haven't. And they beat them early this year. They beat them on the fumble by Henry. Opening week of the season. But that's interesting. And then the Pittsburgh-Baltimore game, I think, is just no more DK Metcalf again this week because it's a 2-game suspension. And I think that really hurts Pittsburgh. And that also puts, I don't know, Baltimore, who should not be a team that's playoff bound, all of a sudden looks like they're a favorite on the road in this one.
Yeah. Okay. So we got 3 NFL games. You guys are both within we're all really close in the standings. I don't know. I'm going to assume I'm getting a loss here with my Rams tonight. So I have 28 wins on the season. Kevin at 26, Darren at 23. Kev still has a chance to catch me as we pick the three games this week. So we'll go in order. So the first game we're picking is Carolina at Tampa Bay. Tampa Bay is a 2.5-point favorite. Darren, who do you got?
You know what? I think Tampa Bay has been awful for such a long stretch right here, and yet I don't trust Carolina on the road. I'm going to take Baker to find a way to win this one and cover the field goal. I think that might win by 3 or 6 points. I can see it being close. I'm going to call it 4. I'm going to say 24-20 victory for the Bucs. I think that they get – I think Carolina's still going to get in the playoffs. I think this scenario is going to happen against them, but I think that Tampa Bay is going to win that game and feel good about themselves going into Sunday.
Kev?
Tampa Bay's been playing horrible for the last several weeks. I just heard that. But in this case, yeah, unlike Darren, I'm going to go with Carolina. I think Carolina wins this one by a field goal. So I'm taking them right with the upset.
I agree with you, Kev. I think Carolina, even in some of these losses, has still played pretty good. I have a feeling that they're going to play really well this week. Ted McMillan, who basically did nothing this week, I think he's going to catch a couple of big balls in this game. I'm taking Carolina with the points. That's game one. Game two is Saturday night. Seattle -1.5 at San Francisco. Darren, you picked Seattle at the beginning of the year.
I'm sticking with it. How can I go against it now? It's been my team all year. And even if I would have forgotten, you remind me every week that I got one thing right this year in the NFL. I like Seattle to win this game. I think they're better. I don't know if I necessarily trust Darnold, but I don't think Purdy's going to have as easy a time against a front four that can rush the passer without blitzing. I think it's going to be a little bit more complicated for San Francisco's offense, and I really don't like San Francisco's back seven right now. All the injuries, Fred Warner and all those guys being out, I just see that. I honestly think that the Seahawks will win this game by a touchdown. Close game, but I think the Seahawks pull away. I'll say 30-23.
Kev?
San Fran, I mean, the job they've done, overcoming all the injuries. I mean, Shanahan's got to be in conversation for Coach of the Year with what they've overcome this year. I mean, there's no doubt about that. And Sam Darnold in the last week of the regular season, no way. I'm taking San Fran by a touchdown.
So I agree with everything you both said. I will put it to you that way. And I'll tell you why, because I don't love this matchup for Seattle. I think they're going to come out and they're going to play. I think they're going to play hard, but I'm not in love with this matchup. And the way you got to attack San Francisco for a lot of this is you got to throw the ball. You got to have receivers to catch the ball. Other than JSN, I don't know who's going to do that. I mean, they went to AJ Bonner this week. You know, they got these guys that they go to. I think Seattle's going to win though. Okay. So I'm going to take Seattle -1.5.
All right. Gives you a chance to catch him.
I need to find out what Gino needs to go before me.
All right. And in the last game of the NFL regular season, Sunday night, 8:00, Baltimore -3.5 at Pittsburgh. This has been a fantasy killer for me all year with Derrick Henry. He's killing me. Darren, who do you like?
Taking Pittsburgh. I hate Baltimore. I'm taking Pittsburgh. I think that they might lose by a field goal. I don't think they lose by more than that at home. I think it's a field goal game either way. I think Pittsburgh's going to win the game some miraculous way. I'm going to take the Steelers to win this game 20-17. I think they're going to slow down Henry. Lamar will be back, but I think it'll be cold. I think it'll be wet. I think he'll land funny, and I think that they'll force Tyler Huntley to have to beat him through the air. I think he'll have to play, and I'm going to take the Steelers.
Kev?
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly with Darren there. I think, especially with Huntley playing for the Ravens in all likelihood, I don't think Jackson's playing. I think the Steelers somehow, some way pulled this off. I think they're going to win this game. So give me the 3.5 as a bonus.
I'm taking Baltimore.
Yeah.
You know why? You know why, Darren?
Because they're better.
You know why?
Why?
Because Derrick Henry, the fantasy season is over. So he has nothing to do but do well. He put up 216-4 this week when it didn't matter to me. Watch, he's going to put up another 203 this week. Tyler Huntley, Lamar Jackson, I don't think it matters. If they run the ball with Derrick Henry, they're probably going to win. I'm taking Baltimore minus 3.5. I think it's a 7-point game. I think it's close, though, Darren. I agree with you. I think it's close. I think it's a 7-point game. All right.
Just before we get out of the NFL, just remember, no Chiefs, no Lions, no Commanders, no Vikings had a UGL last year, no Bengals who were hit or miss, no Bucks perhaps, no Ravens perhaps. A lot of new blood in the playoffs this year, which will make it fun. Not that there isn't some in the NFC, but in the AFC, if Baltimore doesn't get in, Buffalo has no excuse, even as the 5 seed. They're the only experienced team there.
Yeah, you would
have to think that Josh Allen is the quarterback, the one that they'll be eyeing in that, because he doesn't have to face Burrow, who's been his horror guy. He wouldn't have to face Lamar, and he wouldn't have to face Mahomes. But we'll find out in a week. But good stuff.
All right. Those are the picks for Week 18 NFL season.
And it's
coming gone, guys. Coming gone.
Absolutely.
All right, let's head over to some college, Darren.
All right, guys. We are in the quarterfinals, all right? It's bowl time with the big name bowl time type stuff. We've been betting every bowl. Hopefully you're following along with us on Facebook and stuff like that and social media. We're on Instagram with it as well, just giving you our picks. And, you know, feel free. There's a few guys that pick along with us. Continue to do so. We love watching that. But
we love the guys who have picked with us. I mean, thank you so much. You contribute, you add in, you know, rip on me for picking against Alabama last week. I had a couple of guys mentioned about that, not last week and a half ago. Please, if you like our picks, tell us.
We want the engagement. We want to hear from you. So we start Wednesday night, New Year's Eve. Always an easy one to watch with the family.
One thing interesting before you start with that, though.
Yep.
You know, it's going to be interesting this year. You know, last year we had the – you know, rest versus rust. Well, guess what? All four top seeds lost last week in this round to 5 through 8. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be interesting to see because all of these matchups here, all four teams that had the bye last week or the first round haven't played in 3.5, almost 4 weeks.
Yep.
While the 5 through 8 all played a week and a half, you know, about 10, 11, 12 days ago, almost like that perfect time where you get a chance to heal up, rest up, make sure all you guys are healthy, and are they a little bit more on target? So when we get through those games, coming up here, that's something to keep in mind, though. Is last year an aberration, or is last year starting a trend that's going to carry you this year?
No, I agree with you. What we're going to do is we're going to go through each game, and we're going to pick at the end of each little preview. So we're going to make 4 picks, but we're going to do them after we discuss each game, so they won't all be together like we just did with the NFL. So Wednesday night, we kick off with the Cotton Bowl, and that was a great point, Kev. AT&T Stadium is the backdrop, Arlington, Texas. We have the 10 seed Miami, who played last week, like you said, going to get up against the number 2 seed Ohio State Buckeyes. The Buckeyes are favored by 9.5 in this one. The over-under is 40.5. We get Dave Pasch and Dusty Dvorak with Quinn Kesenich on this call. I know you guys were hoping for that one. Last time these two guys teams met in a big game was the 2003 Fiesta Bowl National Championship game where Ohio State – with Maurice Claret and company pulled off the upset and won the national championship. Kev, I'm sorry, Gino, we're starting with you on this one, Gino. What do you like here in the Cotton Bowl? What are you thinking?
So first off, the game opened at -8.5 and it's now at -9.5, which means there is heavy money coming in on Ohio State. And this is the only game that's really jumped a whole point at this point. Some of these games have gone back and forth, but this game has jumped a full point, not the other way at all. Listen, Hurricanes bring a fierce pass rush. They had a good win against 2 weeks ago.
A&M.
I think this is a tough test for them. I think Ohio State is a heavy favorite for a reason. I think Miami's going to protect Carson Beck. But I think Ohio State is going to be that much better defensively. I'm going to take Ohio State minus the points. And I'm not crazy about this one, I have to tell you. But I'm going to take Ohio State minus the points. Kev?
You know, I took a look. All year, Ohio State's offensive line was playing great. They gave up 6 sacks all year until they played Indiana last week, or last game in the Big Ten Championship game. And they gave up 5 sacks to Indiana. And I think Miami's defensive line, especially at the edge with Mezzador and Bain, I think they can get to saying, I think they can dominate this game defensively and force Ohio State's offense to really bog down. that being said, that, you know, Ohio State's defense, I think, should contain Carson Brake pretty well. But I see this as a real low-scoring defensive slog here. I've got Ohio State 21-13, so I've got them winning but not covering.
All right, Kev. I'm not that different than you. Miami, great on both lines, like we talked about. Ohio State does not get pushed around easily, but, you know, Saiyan is still a little inexperienced, in my opinion. Beck has been in big games, okay? At Georgia, he played in these games. You mentioned Indiana sacking them five times. Miami's the team that leads the nation in pressure rate in the whole country, okay? Ohio State last year lost that rivalry game close to Michigan, then went on this roll. Now they lost to Indiana in the championship game. Are they going to do that same roll where nobody could touch them like they did last year? Ohio State leads the nation in big plays against, which means they don't give up big plays. Caleb Downs is that guy that sits back there and doesn't allow those big plays. But when you look at everything, all the stats, on paper it's close. I mean, I think the line of scrimmage actually won by Miami in this game. I think that I'm with you. Actually, I'm a little lower scoring than you are, Kev, even though you think you're low. I have it 17-10. Ohio State winning with Miami covering. I think this game's going to come down to the fourth quarter, last 5 minutes, and I think that Ohio State finds a way. But it wouldn't surprise me if Miami wins this game. So that's where we're going to go with that one. So we have one Ohio State cover, two Miami cover. We all expect Ohio State to get to the next round. Fair?
Yep.
Yeah.
Cool. Then we get to New Year's Day. What bowl season should be? All right, the Orange Bowl. First up at noon. Hard Rock Stadium, Miami Gardens, Florida. The 5-seed Oregon Ducks coming off a huge win against JMU take on the 4th-seeded Texas Tech Red Raiders. Oregon's favored by 2.5. This opened at 1.5 also, G. This one also jumped a point. The over-under, I should say, is 51.5. And we get Joe Tessitore and Jesse Palmer on the call. Another interesting matchup. Neither has beaten a great team all year. Ohio State Oregon at the time, we thought did, though, when they beat Penn State on the road. We thought that was a great win. Texas Tech, when they won at Utah, we thought that was a great win. But we'll find out more. So, Kev, why don't we start with you here in the Orange Bowl? Who's going to advance?
At least on paper, this is the best matchup on paper. Line spread is a small spread. It's 2.5 only. So, you know, I think you're starting off New Year's Day with a great, great game here. You know, Dante Moore, we know how good he is at quarterback. This is probably the healthiest that the wide receiver core has been the entire year for Oregon. I mean, they've got weapons all over the place. But that Texas Tech defense has been top five nationally. I think that's enough. They're going to slow down Oregon. I think Texas Tech has been so underrated, if you can say that about a Big 12 champion. I'm going to go Texas Tech 24-21 in a slight upset.
G, where are we going with this one, pal?
I also like Texas Tech in this one. I got a feeling that this team, they're going to come out. They're going to play really good defense. Oregon, after putting up 51 against James Madison, I think they're going to be a little too happy with this game. I think Texas Tech wins. I think they probably win by 7, 27-20. Give me Texas Tech plus the 2.5. Darren?
Okay, so Oregon's offense led the nation in explosive plays. They had 91 plays, 20 yards or more. Texas Tech allowed 10.9 points a game. They were number one in the country against the run, allowed 68.5 yards a game. Only one team rushed for over 100. That was Kansas State, got the 120. Oregon's number 9 in rushing the ball in the country, right? So this is what it's going to come down to, right? If Oregon can run the ball against Texas Tech, Oregon wins. If Oregon can't run the ball against Texas Tech, Texas Tech wins. Much like you guys, I think that Texas Tech's defense is going to do enough, slow them down, find a way to win. I'm between both of you. I have the final score as 27-24. So I have the 3-point spread, but I have Geno's winning number on the top end and a 1 point off Kevin's on the bottom end. I like Texas Tech to win this one a little bit more high scoring. But not through the roof. 27-24, I think Tech finds a way. A lot of good players in this game that people are going to enjoy watching. Now we go to the 4 o'clock, New Year's Day, the Rose Bowl. Some think that the championship game should always be at the Rose Bowl. It's the granddaddy of them all. Pasadena, California. Okay, we have a massive rain in Southern California. It's a deluge, okay? It's going to be raining for 3 days. I don't know when they're going to be able to paint the field. That's how crazy it is right now, right? We get the number 9 seed, Alabama. Yeah, I'm not misspeaking. The number 9 seed is Alabama. The number 1 seed is Indiana, okay? Indiana is a 7-point favorite. The over-under 48.5. We get Herb Street and Fowler on this one, boys. Gee, who do you like in the granddaddy of them all, the Rose Bowl?
I'm going Alabama. I think the 7 is a big enough number that they're going to play enough to be within the 7. I'm not sure I'm convinced Indiana comes out and is just completely dominant. You know, Alabama just erased, 17-point deficit to survive the first round. I think that Indiana is going to be tested with their offense. The rain probably isn't going to help. Give me Alabama plus the 7.
Kevy, where are we heading?
Yeah, you know, we take a look and think Indiana is obviously more balanced offensively. They have the edge of quarterback. If you heard our draft discussion earlier, Darren and I especially both like Mendoza much, much better than Simpson. Mm-hmm. I think defensively, I think the Indiana defense has an ever so slight edge over Alabama. And I think especially if you can make Alabama one-dimensional, as I've said it before, I'm going to get ripped again by some of our Alabama fans on here. But I think Indiana has a chance to come out here, slow down that Alabama offense, and eventually pull away, cover the spread. They're going to win 28-17.
Okay. For me, okay, Indiana is – well, let's start with Alabama. Alabama doesn't run the ball. Okay, Jam Miller's getting healthier, but they don't run the ball. This is going to be a rainy day in Southern California. Ball gets slick when you're throwing it a lot. Indiana commits to the run. They do a lot of the fundamental things on the Kirsten Yeti that, let's be honest, Alabama is not doing as much on the Kalen DeBoer. They're a one-dimensional team, and if you force them to have to pass in this kind of weather, I think it's a challenge. I think both quarterbacks are good. I mean, as much as we might like Mendoza better, Simpson's a good quarterback, no doubt about it. The big neutralizer against Indiana is that they have two defensive ends that are out for this one, okay? So they lose Daly and Wyatt, Daly being a little bit of a bigger blow, in my opinion, while Alabama seems to be getting healthier at this time. But even with that, I just think because they have trouble running the ball and that Indiana can get pressure like they did against Ohio State, against Alabama's offensive line the same way, I think Indiana wins the game in a low-scoring, sloppy 20-10 game. I'll take Indiana to the under and the cover. And we go to the finale. This is the most interesting one, the nightcap, G, because they played each other already. We get the Sugar Bowl, New Orleans, Louisiana. We get Ole Miss, number 6, against the number 3-seeded Georgia Bulldogs. Georgia, 6.5-point favorite. Listen, like I said, rematch from an earlier game where Georgia won by 8, but Ole Miss led most of the way in that one. The over-under is 55.5. We get Sean McDonough and Greg McElroy on the call. All the games are on ESPN, just in case anyone's curious. Kev, where are you going here with this one?
Yeah, like I said, the first game especially, you look back, Georgia down 9 after 3. They outscore Ole Miss 17-0 in the fourth. We're all rooting for Ole Miss, especially after what Lane Kiffin did to them. But I think they got their moment last week in the first round. I think that's over and done with. I think Georgia's a better team. And I think especially since it's 6.5, it was 7.5, I might start thinking the other way. But since it's only 6.5, that to me swings it to Georgia. I'm going to take Georgia, a pretty high scoring game here. I've got them 35-24.
G, where are you heading?
I like Georgia also. I actually agree on Kev's point. I think Ole Miss's game was last week, 2 weeks ago, when they knocked out Tulane. They put up 41. They're not putting up 41 here. Georgia's defense has allowed just 29 points in the last 4 games. Georgia won by 8 the last time. I like the 6.5. I agree with Kev. Give me Georgia minus the 6.5. 41-20. I think this is kind of big scoring for them. Yeah. Yeah. Darren?
Yeah, this one's interesting, right? Georgia's just battle-tested more than Ole Miss in this one. You know, Frazier can run the ball. Gunnar Stockton has gotten better and better. His first thought last year was they lost this game last year. And if you don't think Kirby Smart's been telling them they lost the Sugar Bowl last year to Notre Dame, you're crazy because he's been reminding them every 3 seconds. I like Gunnar Stockton. The defense is getting better and better every week since that Ole Miss game, by the way. The most dynamic player in this whole tournament, by the way, is Trinidad Chambliss. He is the best all-around runner thrower that we're going to see in this tournament. I just don't think it's enough. I think Georgia is very good at – they don't turn the ball over. They're strong defensively. They don't commit a lot of penalties. Georgia's ninth in the country in fewest penalties. Ole Miss is 63rd, all right? Georgia's great defensively in the red zone. Only Ohio State is better at the teams left. The Lane Kiffin loss, I think, is big in a spot like this where you have to match wits. I think Charlie Weiss Jr. did a good job against Tulane, but we're going to see what he does in this one. I think Georgia, much like Geno, in a big way, 37-20 was my score. I think that the game is competitive for about 2.5 quarters, and then Georgia just wears them down. And that, those are our picks. Now, one last thing in college football before we move on, Kev. Michigan made a hire this week for their new head coach. So I know you're a big fan of the former Utah coach. Why don't you tell us what your thoughts are on this hire?
I think that's a great hire for Michigan. I mean, he's a guy that's going to come in from Utah, Winningham, and I think he's going to bring a little bit of, I'll call it law and order, to this rogue Michigan program here. He's going to come in, he's going to clean it up. Tremendous, tremendous hire for Michigan. I mean, they needed a guy to come in and put all this crap behind them. Started with Harbaugh to Moore, and I think he's got a clean house. And, you know, we know Utah. They're a tough, gritty team. They play hard. They play well. I think he's going to bring that same mentality up to Michigan. And next year might still be that transition year. I think they're still going to – they may struggle a little bit next year, but I think definitely by the year after you're going to see the fruits of this hire.
Any problem with him retiring and then taking this job?
No, it's Michigan. I mean, they're about Michigan's top five program in the country that you go out of your way for to make an exception for.
I agree. I agree. He's allowed to make his move. Just curious about that. I mean, listen, a lot of going on with the Bulls. I mean, I feel like – listen, I was listening to Calipari talk the other day, guys, and I don't know what your thoughts on this, but he was saying to the point where players should be allowed to transfer once and otherwise they should have to sit out. Other coaches have come out and said that they should have to honor their contract. They could also be fired from their contract if they don't play up to par. There's a lot of different things that I'm hearing. Something's got to be done, though, because right now what was the stat I read the other day? Do you know that the receiver on Ohio State, blanking on his name, the superstar, Smith, makes more money than Smith and Jigma does right now? I'm being honest. He makes more money. I mean, there's something wrong when that's the way the system is going. I have no problem with the players getting paid, but I think they should have to sign contracts and honor them, in my opinion. I don't know what you guys' thoughts are on that, but I think you shouldn't be able just to jump around from team to team over and over again. I mean, we saw in college basketball, it's a little different. We saw Baylor sign a guy that went to the G League, got drafted 31st in the NBA 3 years ago, ended up in the G League, then ended up overseas, and now he's starting college with 4 years of eligibility. Something seems wrong about this to me. So I don't know what you guys think about what has to be done.
I like that idea of, you know, you get one free transfer. We'll call it free.
Yep.
If you're going to transfer a second time, you got to sit down for a year like the old rules used to be. I think it would tamp down on some of this bouncing around.
Now, listen, you understand a coach selling the kid a bill of goods or a coach leaving or another kid coming into the program that you didn't know was coming, that took your spot or whatever it may be. But
yep.
So you give them the one. But if they do it four – these guys are transferred four times in 4 years now. It's getting to be out of hand.
And the way they use this as leverage to get this extra NIL money, I mean, they're negotiating every year for their contracts basically. It's a pro system. Where there's free agency every year, you're basically under a 1 year contract, and you don't even have to finish off that 1 year. By the time you start, I'm opting out, I'm transferring, I'm going into the portal, I'm not finishing up the year, I'm not going to play in the bowl game. You sign a deal, you sign NIL money, you get NIL money, you play every game, unless you're injured. You need to live up to your end of the bargain. Also,
I think contracts are important. Gee, any thoughts on this?
The whole system needs to be revamped. This is like the Wild Wild West right now. There's no rules. Everything's out there. You can sign guys. You can cut guys. Guys can leave for no reason at all. It's just, it's the wild, wild west. That they need to do something. It can't just happen randomly every, you know, think about what's the next step of this in the evolution. Guys leaving three games into the year because they don't want to be there. I'm being honest. I mean, the way this damn thing is going, that's the next step of this, right? I'm gonna transfer after five games because this program stinks and I want to go play for whoever at Oregon and they lost the quarterback. I mean, it's the wild, wild west. I think something has to get done.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I'm all for the players, like I said, getting paid somewhat, but I think it's got to be organized. So, listen, we're going to see what happens. They got to do something. Otherwise, the bowl system's still going to be a mess. The NCAA tournament's going to be more top-heavy like it was last year. Things have to happen a little bit. So that's what we have to see. You guys have anything? I have a couple of buried treasures, unless you guys have something else you want to get into. I'm going to jump into them. Guys, you remember Shane McClanahan, right, of the Rays? Yeah. Right, he's been injured a little bit. The last time he pitched was 8 days before Paul Skeens had a minor league debut. Just a quick trivia question for you guys. Who holds the all-time defensive war, highest defensive war in Major League Baseball history?
Defensive war?
Mm-hmm.
Ozzy?
You got it. 44.2. Wow. Ozzie Smith wasn't just the wizard in one way. Best defensive player ever, by the way.
That was actually going to be my guess, Kev.
Only reason why I asked it because I thought you both had a shot at it. Okay. One other one for baseball. The Cubs, you know, originally played in a field called Westside Park before they moved to Wrigley, okay? There was a mental hospital over the left field fence just beyond the wall. That's where the term out of left field came from. Anytime something strange, the term out of – oh, that came out of left field. It was because they had that mental facility over the left field fence. I did not know that. I thought that was great. Quick point for you. In 1959, the record bench press of 256 kilograms or 565 pounds with no elbow or wrist wraps was by Bruno Sammartino.
Ah, Bruno.
a little wrestling action for you. Couple quick NFL. The first one, just a thought. If the Titans had any kind of front office at all, their leadership right now, they would have Malik Willis at quarterback, Derrick Henry at running back, A.J. Brown at wide receiver, and Vrabel be coaching. Just saying. And then the last one. In 1993, in wind chills of 22 degrees below zero, the Packers beat the L.A. Raiders 28-0 to clinch their first postseason berth since 1982. The Packers defense put the game away with a fumble recovery for a touchdown by Leroy Butler, who did the first ever Lambeau leap.
Wow.
I didn't realize. I thought it was an old thing.
Yeah.
I didn't know that it just became popular then.
Wow.
And those, I should say, are the buried treasures for the week, guys. Do you guys have anything else? Anything sports related you want to add, Kev? Anything about the Islanders?
Yeah. Something a little interesting last night. Well, over the weekend, they were able to beat the Rangers again, 2-0. 7-0 in the two games. So the Rangers have as many goals against the Islanders as we do. Yes, I'm remembering it's my Ranger friends. But then last night, Mason Marchment, you know, his father, Bryant, was a goon in the NHL. I mean, he was suspended, 14 different times in the 12 years that he played. Last night, he
said about the penalty call from last night. But anyway, let's move on.
Last night, he took three different runs at Schaefer.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the last one was, you know, the Islanders looked at it. They thought it was knee. He was going for the knee-to-knee hit.
And that's what it looked like.
And of all players, Matt Barzell's when they came to his defense, took the two-handed slash, got him around the skate. I mean, it wasn't like it was a two-handed slash to the head or anything like that. He went for the skate. Marchment goes down like he was watching soccer with a flop. I mean, the fact that he got up right away, skated off, served his 2 minutes for the tripping penalty on Schaefer, came back, had no real effect. The NHL handed down their punishment today. Barzell gets fined $5,000, which is the maximum. It looks like no suspension. I mean, to me, the fact that it's Matt Barzell of all people sticking up for Schaefer, they all just need an enforcer in the worst way.
They
need somebody out there to take care of him.
But he was one of the ones on the ice though at the time. I mean,
and all the credit
he wasn't going to let it go. You know, and you said a two-handed slash. That was like a two-handed home run swing to his ankles. I saw it. That wasn't a slash. He wound up completely.
Listen, it's a sign of leadership, though, from Barzell. I remember watching the Islanders, and I'm not the Islander fan you guys are. I root for the Flames. But I remember watching the Islanders back when the Philly had the bullies and they had Brown and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I remember a game where they were making runs at everybody. It was after the glory days. I remember Bob Bassett went in there and fought Brown, and he got his ass kicked. But you know what? Somebody had to do it. Somebody had to go in there and make a statement. Back then, you had to drop the gloves. Now you can get away with the two-handed slash, and maybe they just send you down the fine and the penalty. But back then, you had to drop the gloves a little bit. And I think that's something that bodes well for the Islanders going forward, that they're protecting the 18-year-old superstar. And, you know, listen, they're playing good hockey right now.
Yeah,
they're the best team. They're the best local team right now. Hard to argue with what they're doing.
They're protecting him, and Roy comes out. Were you mad about Barzell? Hell no. I was so glad to see teammates sticking up for each other. We all thought that was a need-to-need attempt there. And Roy, you know, a little bit more old school probably as well, but he was fine with Barzell going after him.
Of course he should be. You got to stick up for the kid. I agree. Yep. You guys have anything else before we wrap it up?
Final goodbye for 2025, Darren.
Exactly. Yeah. Happy New Year to all the listeners. Happy New Year to all the people that follow us on social. We really appreciate you. We are the Sports Kings from Queens. I'm Darren here with Kevin, here with Gino. Talking about the wonderful, wild, and wacky world of sports. A wacky world where I had no idea where the term out of left field or when the Lambo leap started. Please download the podcast. Anyway, you can get a podcast, whether it be an Apple product, Spotify, TuneIn, whatever you like. We're posting a ton on social, especially here during bowl season. We put up every bowl. Make your pick with us. Let us know who you like, who you don't like, whatever the story may be. And definitely pick the playoffs with us, NFL and college. And without any further ado, may your sports be with you.
This year, experience the NHL playoffs your way. Want to watch a single? Do or die Game 7, a full week of heavy-hitting back-and-forth series. Then check out Sling's 1-3 and 7-day passes. Watch The Chase for the Cup on ESPN and TNT, starting as low as $4.99. No long-term contracts or overpaying. Just live hockey at home or when you want it. Sling lets you do that. Visit sling.com to learn more.